May it please the court, my name is Edwin Gagne. I represent the petitioner in this matter, Tahir Yusinovich, who is seeking asylum before the INS. Just as a brief summary, the petitioner entered the U.S. lawfully in 1990, and then filed an application for asylum in 1991, as he had suffered mistreatment in his country of origin, Yugoslavia, and was afraid to return for fear of serious harm. And I'll give a brief chronology of the administrative handling of the case, because I'd like to refer to it later on. He entered in 1990. He applied for asylum in 1991. He had an interview before the asylum office in 1992 and in 1995. And his case was referred to the immigration court by the asylum office, and he had a hearing before an immigration judge in 1996. And then after 5 years, the Board of Immigration Appeals made a decision denying, or rather upholding, the findings of the immigration judge in August of 2001. So it took over 10 years for the INS to adjudicate his application. At no time did the petitioner ever seek a continuance. It was strictly the service taking 10 years to make a decision. Now, the basis for his application for asylum is threefold. The first being that his background is that of a Muslim, which is a religious minority in Montenegro. The second, that he is an Albanian, which is also a minority in Montenegro. And the third is his political opposition to the socialist government, which was in effect in during the time that he was living there, up till 1990. Now, to be granted asylum, an applicant can show either past persecution or show a well-founded fear of future persecution. Now, we concede that the harm that he suffered does not amount to past persecution according to precedent in the Seventh Circuit, which sets a rather high standard. However, we would say that the events that the harm that he suffered would form a basis for a well-founded fear of future persecution. And case law from the Board of Immigration Appeals has said that this amounts to approximately a 10% chance of persecution occurring if he had to return to his country. Now, the evidence consisted of his testimony as to his mistreatment, testimony that the immigration judge found to be largely credible. And also there was documentary evidence in the record pertaining to the mistreatment of ethnic and religious minorities in Yugoslavia. Now, his testimony was basically with regards to the incident that occurred to him. He had suffered physical and verbal abuse on account of his religious and ethnic identity, and he had been jailed on account of his organizing demonstrations in opposition to the socialist government then in force. Now, with regards to the decision of the BIA, we find it to be wholly inadequate for numerous reasons. First of all, it's a very short decision. It's less than 2 pages, most of which is actually just a recitation of the facts in his testimony. They rely, at least in part, on the fact that they took judicial notice of changed country conditions in Yugoslavia. And we find this to be an error for several reasons. First of all, when they do take judicial notice, they should give an individualized analysis of his claim. And they failed to do that beyond stating a conclusion that they can take judicial notice and that applies.
When did the change in government take place with relation to this case? What, did it take place when it was before the board, or did it take place when it was before the ALJ, or what?
When it was before the board. There was a democratically elected, supposedly democratically elected government in year 2000, removing the socialist government that had been in effect for many years.
You're not making the argument that you didn't have an opportunity to respond to that development, did you?
Well, no. That occurred strictly with the decision of the BIA in August 2001. I did not have a case through the administrative part.
You're not complaining about that as I read your brief in any way.
Well, actually, that didn't occur to me. We would, yes, actually, that is, it's not fair what they did in terms of...
that complaint is frequently raised with regard to these State Department determinations. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you. And if the BIA had made an individualized analysis of the changed country conditions, they would have talked about the fact that the other two parts of his claim would not be affected. I mean, it's arguable that the change in government would affect his claim based on political opposition, since he's no longer opposing then a socialist government, but what about his ethnic claims and his claim on the basis of being persecuted on the basis of his religion? These would not change with a change in government. And these are institutional aspects of the society there, as we know from the events that occurred there. So the BIA simply failed to do that, and we would say that that's...
Lots of it, though, is much more associated with ethnic cleansing than its successor, wasn't it, right?
It's true, but, you know, it wasn't just one man. It occurred because the hatred of ethnic minorities and religious minorities runs very deep in those societies. It couldn't have been one person who created those years and years of ethnic cleansing and all the harm that occurred there. Then the other argument that the BIA makes is that, well, it's been now 10 years since he came to this country and filed for asylum. So how would the government in Yugoslavia then remember who he was if he had to return? But we say that you could dispose of a majority, perhaps, of asylum applications in this way. Say that, well, now it's been 10 years. We delayed the case for 10 years. So now your case shouldn't be granted because it's been so long. So we think that to be a very unfair argument. Then the other basis that we take issue with the opinion is what they really appear to rely on in making their decision. I'll just read the one sentence that appears to be important to the BIA. They say that he did not have to provide direct proof of a prosecutor's motive, but he was required to provide some evidence, either direct or circumstantial, of those motives, which he did not do. Now, that appears to be one prong of the four-prong test to determine a well-founded fear of future persecution, as set forth under the matter of Acosta case. But that statement is clearly erroneous. I mean, that prong would relate to a case where persecution is unclear, as to one person being singled out, not where there's, you know, years and years of ethnic cleansing and ethnic hatred and hatred against religious and ethnic minorities. So, first of all, it was obvious what the motive was, and second of all, that information is contained in the record. All the human rights reports point out the harm that has come to the ethnic and religious minorities. And further, there's case law in the BIA, I'll refer to matter of FP, 21 INN decisions 486, that the applicant does not need to show, exact motivation, where the motivation, where the actions were motivated by one of the enumerated grounds for asylum, such as freedom of religion or ethnicity. Then with regards to the well-founded fear of persecution, the court simply makes a conclusion, saying he does not meet that standard. But they have no discussion of their basis for reaching that conclusion, apart from the sentence that I just read you. I see the light is on, so...
You reserved some time for rebuttal?
Yes, I did.
Very good.
Thank you.
Ms. Parker?
May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Parker of the United States Department of Justice, and I represent the appellee, INS, in this case. Substantial evidence of record supports the Board's decision to deny the petitioner's asylum claim because he failed to prove that he was a refugee. The Board properly considered and rejected his claim that he had a well-founded fear of future persecution, and it acted within its discretion when it took administrative notice of the change in country conditions in his native Montenegro, which is a part of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. Further, this court lacks jurisdiction to consider the petitioner's application for suspension of removal under the Nicaraguan Adjustment and Central Relief Act because he failed to exhaust his administrative remedies. I'd like to first address his claim, petitioner's claim, that the board did not fully consider his claim of that he had a well-founded fear of persecution. His main claim is that they gave cursory notice to that claim, and when you take a look at the board's decision, all they did was consider his well-founded fear claim. That was really all that was before them. They did address each of the four prongs that the petitioner raised in his brief to the board, and those come from the four factors of the Acosta-Mogherini decisions, BIA decisions, that he holds Muslim beliefs and is a known anti-communist and ethnic Albanian, that the government and local police were aware of his religious beliefs and his political activities, that they had the capability of punishing him, and that they had the inclination to punish him. And that was the basis of his claim that he has a well-founded fear of future persecution. And the board did address each of those prongs of the four factors that he raised. They did rely on his own testimony as far as whether the that he holds Muslim beliefs and is a known anti-communist. His own, the petitioner's own testimony was that he was not very active in his religion. He'd never been prohibited from worshiping. He'd never been physically or verbally abused, and that was his testimony at his deportation hearing. The only tie he had to any sort of religious persecution was that his cousin was a Haza at a local mosque. Other than that, there was, he did not testify to any sort of religious persecution. He did say that one coworker got into a fight with him. It did not turn physical, and that was that there were some statements made that he should be silent and he had no rights. And as a result, he said he stayed home from work for a few days. The board also looked at the anti-communist activities and decided that
the Muslim population of Montenegro is that, I assume, predominantly Albanian. Is there any way of knowing how significant a population that was in Montenegro?
I don't know what the population was at the time. They were a minority. There is a State Department report, which I believe was admitted as Exhibit 4, and there was an advisory opinion in which the State Department said that Albanians were subject to personal discrimination within the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, but the treatment varied from area to area, and Montenegro, which did have an Albanian minority, was not guilty of the human rights abuses such as we've seen in Kosovo. And the petitioner is not from an area that is anywhere near Kosovo, or he's actually from Bar, which is in Montenegro, and is on the western coast near the Adriatic Sea. So he's, and as the immigration judge repeatedly pointed out throughout the proceedings, he's not from Kosovo. He's not from any of those areas that the State Department was focusing on. And if you take a look at the State Department report that was actually introduced during his proceedings, it does talk about the problems that the ethnic Albanian Muslims were having, but none of those were in the area that the petitioner was from. The board did also talk about whether or not the government would be aware of his activities now. And the government, again, they did take administrative notice of the change in the country conditions with the election of Kostunica, who replaced Milosevic. And that his activities way back when, 10 or 11 years ago, were so insignificant that there's no way that the government, which has since changed, would ever remember anything that he possibly did. And then finally, the board did address his contention that the robbery that his mother experienced 5 years after he came to the United States was, and he claims it shows that they would persecute him were he to go back. The board did find, and it specifically agreed with the immigration judge, that that was just a robbery and there was no evidence that it was tied to his ethnic or religious or political opinion. If the court doesn't have any more questions as to the well-founded fear issue, I'll move on to the changed country conditions. And again, the board did act within its discretion in taking administrative notice of those changed country conditions. And if the petitioner did disagree with those changed country conditions, he could have filed a motion to reopen to allow him to present some evidence that the government did not change, as the board indicated. However, here in this case, the petitioner is not disputing that the government changed. And that is all that the board took administrative notice was that the Serbian-Montenegrin government that he was so concerned about was no longer in power and that Milosevic had been ousted.
Well, the government of Serbia changed and Milosevic went out, but Montenegro has its own government, doesn't it?
Well, they are now a constituent republic of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia,
okay,
which is what the board did recognize when it made its decision. Absent any further questions, I'll go ahead and conclude. The board did properly consider and reject Appellant's claim that he had a well-founded fear of future persecution. Because substantial evidence supports the board's decision to deny petitioner's asylum, and because the board acted within its discretion when it took administrative notice of the changed country conditions, this court to deny, should affirm the board's decision and deny his petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Parker.
Well, our position with regards to the judicial notice of the changed government is simply that it's a complicated issue, and it can't be resolved by the BIA in a couple of sentences. We see numerous instances in Eastern Europe of governments changing, but really it's just the same people wearing a different cap. And I think in fairness to this petitioner who had his application pending for so long, but they need to flesh out those issues. And also the fact that they did not address how it affects his ethnic claim and his religious claim. So we feel that point is very unfair. And with regards to his testimony, he did testify. Majority of his mistreatment was based on political opposition, perhaps, but he did testify that he suffered verbal abuse, at least, on the basis of his religion, although that was not really put into a lot of detail in his testimony, but he did suffer that. The record shows how religious minorities are treated in that country at that time and now. And so I think that point is still very well taken. And just to summarize, we would say it behooves this court to ensure that this application has been properly adjudicated, given the harm that he might face if returned to his country. We would ask that this case be remanded back to the immigration court for a rehearing on the issue of changed country conditions, and would also allow him to apply for relief under NACARA, which unfortunately he missed the deadline to apply for on account of his previous attorney not noticing that he was eligible. And I think he had some bad luck in that regard because the brief was filed in this case in, I think, like June of 1997, and Congress enacted NACARA in December of 1997 to ameliorate the harsh effects of IRA-IRA, the statute which passed in 1996, which removed many forms of relief. So I think because the brief was done and the case finished prior to NACARA coming out, the attorney didn't consider that he could apply for NACARA. So it's a very unfortunate circumstance, which this court can rectify.
You think we would have jurisdiction to address that question?
Unfortunately, IRA-IRA also removed your jurisdiction.
Yes.
It did. However, if the case is remanded for consideration of changed country conditions, we could also make an application for NACARA before the immigration court. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel.
Thanks.
And the case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the fourth case, United